Brian, we had an opportunity today to check out the first five periods of practice, and so we kind of divided and conquered today, and you kind of went defense and a little, you know, and they did some combo stuff, so you also saw a little bit of offense, and then I kind of hung down with the big uglies in the offensive line and watched them and their deal, and I was able to send you some video, so you kind of got to do all of it, which was awesome. And so we're going to talk about practice today. Practice? We're talking about practice. And some good things that we saw in practice, of course, as a caveat, always want to remind people that we get to see the first five periods of practice. And so really no team or anything like that. It's a lot of drill work. Today was a goal line day. I'll just say that. And so a lot of emphasis, at least in where I was over with the offensive lineman, was on goal line and kind of what they want to do down there. And so we saw some different combinations of some guys, which was very interesting. And so we got a lot actually to report in our five period day. And it was also a much shorter practice for Notre Dame. They got done a little bit early today. I'm sure that they're about 2 weeks in right now, a week and a half in, something like that, right?
And so yeah, first practice was on July 31st. So we're almost
10, 11 days in. And yeah. So, you know, you start to get a little bit of camp fatigue, and they've got pretty much one more week of actual camp, and then they're going to be rolling into Texas A&M, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, gosh, 21 days kicking season off. I mean, 3 weeks from today, we're going to have Notre Dame football.
Game. Yeah, we're going to have a game.
2 weeks from today, we're going to be in the middle of watching the Florida State-Georgia Tech game.
Oh, that's right.
Yep.
Sign me up.
Very excited about that, my friend. Very excited about that. But
and that's when high school football starts too, so I'm pumped.
I'll be honest, Vince. I did not get middle of camp vibes from the team today.
Yeah, I agree.
I didn't see the heavy legs that I normally see. Now, again, maybe by the time they got to middle of practice, but I didn't see what I – now, I'm curious what they're going to look like on the 15th when we get there. But just going through drills, because that's usually at least – what I've seen from the past at Notre Dame, not even what, you know, the athletes that I coach at the 1AA and D3 level, I'm talking like at Notre Dame. Usually it's during drills that you start to see a little bit of that heavy leggedness. Guys are on the ground a lot more, you know, and you see some of that drag. I didn't see that today. I thought they looked pretty sharp today, athletic. I didn't think they looked super tired. So, I mean, you talk about we're now 11 practices in. This is kind of when that starts to happen. So,
exactly.
you know, I that was an encouraging thing for me, is I did not notice this as a team with a lot of – even with linemen. Like, look, you know, because, like, I watched Sparks. I watched a little bit of linemen, but just watching the videos, because you basically recorded all the stuff down there so I could watch that later. I didn't see those heavy-legged, you know, reps with them. Watching Al Washington work with the D-line today – I didn't see a lot of heavy leggedness there. There's a couple guys, the older guys, they're holding out and not doing as much and things like that to keep them fresh. But just overall, this did not look like at least offensively, it did not look like a team that's dragging. And from what we've seen from this offense, these receivers are running a lot of downfield routes. So this would kind of be the time where that starts to hit in. So that was a good sign that we just didn't see a lot of that today. I thought a little bit of camp arm setting in today with the quarterbacks. Like Riley Leonard had a couple misses outside where you could just kind of tell, and Steve Angeli had a couple that just kind of died at the end. So you could see a little bit of camp arm setting in, but nothing to be like, I mean, you're never concerned about it because you know it's coming, but I didn't say it looked good. It looked good. Just overall, the operation I thought was good.
Awesome. So let's dive into a little bit of offensive line talk, Brian, and I'll kind of talk about what I saw and some different things. And we saw a little bit of positional movement today, you know, just, and again, people, you need to, I want to put this out there, you know, just because some guys are playing some different spots and doing some different things, they're working on depth. They're working on who works best together. There's a lot of different things that they're working through. So just because one guy is lined up next to another guy at the same time, it's like, I just want to make sure everybody's not jumping off the ledge about certain things. So I'll put that out there. Now, with that said, you know, Pat Coogan, for example, he ran the entire day that we were there, at least the first five periods, he ran at center the entire time. He was running with the number two group at center. And so as Brian and I have discussed on numerous occasions, you know, Pat Coogan understanding multiple positions is a very good thing for this team, right? And You know, in a perfect world, he's that super sub in the middle where he can, you know, move to center. He can play guard. He can do all of these different things. And, you know, that's a good thing. So he was working at center the entire time. And so that was something that stuck out. So that means that Rocco Spindler was then getting first team reps at left guard next to Tosh Baker. So that's kind of how things shook out from like a first team, second team kind of a deal. Prize Picks is America's number one daily fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. Prize Picks is the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Unlike other apps, on Prize Picks, it's just you against the numbers. All you do is pick more or less on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in, baby. Get in on the daily action with your friends and become part of the Prize Picks community today. Get in on all the excitement and win up to 100 times your cash with the summer games on Prize Picks. With Prize Picks, you could turn $10 into $1,000 while watching Team USA rack up the gold medals this summer. You can make Prize Picks lineups of players across basketball, soccer, tennis, golf, and more in as little as 60 seconds. Just pick more or less on 2 to 6 player stat projections and you're locked in. Prize Picks is available in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and Georgia. I recently won big with a 4-player stat projection. I picked LeBron James to go under 17.5 points in Team USA's first game of the tournament. I picked Stephen Curry to go under 2.5 three-pointers. I picked Kevin Durant to go over 13.5 points. And I threw in Dansby Swanson to have over half of an RBI. Bing, bang, boom, baby. That's a victory. It's just that easy. Download the Prize Picks app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code IRISH on Prize Picks for a deposit match of up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Speaking of second team, the move of Coogan to center, again, not move of Cougar, where he was getting reps today,
right?
You then saw Sam Pendleton out at left guard,
yes,
with the twos, and then you saw Sevan Absher working at right guard today. So there's a lot of moving parts there, Vince, and again, not to be unexpected, it kind of fits with what we kind of see a lot of years as they look to build their two deep.
Right.
I wouldn't read into this like Rocco Spindler's won the left guard job. I would not read that into it. We saw 2 days ago, they put out scrimmage clips of the, and we saw Pat Coogan with the first team at left guard. So I just think this is just, and I wouldn't be shocked if we found out during the team periods that there was team periods where Coogan was back out at guard. Like I don't read into it. It's just, this is a thing where if Ashton Craig goes down, your next man in may not be Sam Pendleton.
Right.
It's probably Rocco Spindler. Well, you're not putting Rocco at center, so you cross-train Pat at center so where if there's a need at center, he can play it. That's really what today is about. It's not Pat Coogan made the full-time move to center and he's now going to be Ashton Craig's backup. It's no, we need to train him there so we can make sure that if something happens to Ashton, we can get our best five on the field. And on the inside, that right now is going to be some combination of four guys, Coogan, Craig, Shrouth, I'm going left to right, and then Spindler.
Yep.
And then the one guy that has the most versatility in that group is probably Coogan because Coogan snapped before. He either his freshman or sophomore year spent a lot of time at center.
Okay.
So this is something where this is more of a cross-training session today.
Yep.
Than it was – hey, are they going to move Pat Coogan to center? So I just, and then while you're doing that, then Rocco gets first team snaps left guard, which really you're going to have those two rotating in the first team anyway. Mm-hmm. So on one of the days where Rocco is going to be with the first team at left guard, why not take that day to have Coogan cross training at center? It actually
makes a lot of sense. And since we're not there every day, we kind of have to extrapolate what we see and kind of go with it. You know, we don't know what happened. Like you said, we don't know what happens in team. You know, maybe Coogan isn't snapping anymore when they move to team, or, you know, maybe he's been working at center every time that Rocco's been working at left guard. We don't, We honestly don't know.
Well, in the drills we've seen, he hasn't been. But to your point, is that what's going on in team? We don't know the answer to that. Right. So that's why we're just trying to give you a warning, like, hey, don't read too much into that. And that's coming from two guys that want to see Rocco Spindler as a starting left guard.
Yeah.
It's just being fair. That's just not what we expect to see.
Right.
So let's just kind of talk about a couple of the guys that we saw, Vince.
Okay.
Right. Tosh Baker. I thought early on, Vince, you and I were talking before, he did look like a little heavy footed early on.
So
I thought that got better.
Yeah.
As we got more into the practice.
So here's what's interesting. When I first started watching the offensive line, I was just watching. I was standing there just kind of taking it in. That's the evaluation that I had on Tosh as I was kind of watching them at the very beginning. And then the light bulb went on. I was like, hey, wait a minute. I can film this and I can show it to Brian too. And so then when I started filming it, he got better. Like, he wasn't kind of as heavy footed as he was at the beginning of practice. Right. Yeah. And so you didn't see some of the earlier stuff that I was watching, and like, I had already kind of formed my opinion, and then I'm watching it through my, you know, through my phone,
right,
and all of that. But anyway, your point is absolutely on point. Like, he started out a little heavier and then got better as the practice went on.
Yeah, and the drills I saw, I thought he actually moved his feet relatively well for what we're used to. Now, again, we were seeing run stuff. They were working on run game stuff today in the periods we saw. I thought Tosh did a really nice job of keeping his pads low, which is a concern for me. He wasn't playing high. I thought they were working combos, so he was having to – there was one block. Now, again, this is against another offensive lineman, but he did a really nice job kind of opening up that front foot and then bringing the back hip, right, the far hip inside and getting leverage inside of a lineman there. And then Rocco gets off to the second level. So I thought Tosh, from what we saw today, run game wise, just going through drills, looked solid. Look, now it doesn't say anything about his overall preparedness for the position, right? It's just from what I saw today, look solid, look good. And look like he's getting a little bit more. Did you notice a little bit more push from him today than what we saw from him in the spring?
He was, yes.
A little bit more drive in his lower body. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he was sinking his hips more. He was bending at the knees and getting down and not playing as high. Because Tosh has a tendency, like here's his hips, right? Tosh has a tendency in the past to just kind of go like this. And he like looks like this. It's like, you don't sink your hips, or you don't bend at the hips, you bend at the knees.
Yeah.
Sink your hips. When you sink your hips, you bend your knees, as opposed to leaning over. And that was a big problem Tosh had. And that's why Tosh was always on the ground so much in the past, because he would just kind of bend over, and he's so long in the torso, he was kind of just kind of take him down like a tree. Today we saw a better job of Tosh sinking his hips and working, and that was a positive to see.
I like watching Rocco and Tosh work together. I do think there is a bit of a mental, like, oh, Rocco's a really good run blocker, and so I kind of got to pick up my game a little bit and get, you
hope
know,
so.
You know what I mean? I like that combo working together. That's what I saw today. I saw two guys just kind of road grading over there, and it was enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, agree. Rocco, I thought, there was one drill where they were working on a double team, and Rocco got a little fast getting up to the second level, and he kind of got his shoulders above his feet and he went down. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, I thought he moved his feet well. He's always going to be a little heavy-footed guy, but his power steps today were good. He was sinking his hips, and I thought he got real good push and looked really good in drills. Billy Shrouth was excellent. I mean, he works at a different speed than everybody else, just athletically. He's just so much quicker than everybody else. But what I noticed today from Billy too, Vince, is a little bit more punch, a little bit more emphasis. They don't, as a whole, I just don't think Joe Rudolph teaches that real well. They don't use their hands violently as a unit, I don't think, Vince. I don't know if you agree or disagree with that.
Yeah.
But I thought Billy was doing a little bit of that today. That was
some of that to me has a lot to do with comfortability. In the past, when I've coached offensive line and when I've been around offensive linemen, when they're like really thinking about where they need to go, what they need to do, they're just worried about getting to the right place at the right time. Once they feel super comfortable with what they're doing, then you start to see more of an explosion and more of a physical dominance once they get there, if that makes sense. Like and it's like that for any position. Like once you know what you're doing, you play freer, you play faster, you play stronger, right? It's the same thing for offensive linemen. I think these guys are starting to feel more comfortable with what they're doing and where they're going and how that works. And now you're starting to see a little bit more of an explosion. And I think we saw that from Billy today.
Yeah. Ashton looked good working up the middle, right tackle, Emil was he was putting his head down a little too much today and bending over at the hips as opposed to sinking his hips. He actually looked like one of the few guys that looked like he had camp legs today because he didn't want to sink his hips at all.
Right.
And that's the reason I don't worry about that, Vince, is because that's normally something that Emil does well, is sink his hips and drive through contact. Sure. He was the one guy that looked like he was maybe dragging a little bit today, but you know, just you want to see more of, you don't want to put your head down. You want to go face to face as an offensive lineman. He was putting his head down a little bit, bending over at the waist instead of sinking his hips.
Right.
And that's not normally what Emil does. So he's the one guy that if I said had noticeable sort of mid camp, you know, camp legs, it would be Emil.
Yeah.
From what I saw today.
That's fair. And it doesn't overly surprise me because he's probably amped up going into camp because he's on a position battle. You know what I mean? And so he's going extra to start, you know, and I don't mean extra in a bad way. I just mean, you know, putting out that energy and doing all. So it doesn't overly surprise me, but you know, it's something to pay attention to, right? For the next time that we get some eyes on practice.
I want to respond to something real quick, Vince. Somebody asked in the chat, kind of a follow-up to what I'm talking about. Say, now, what do you mean use your hands violently?
Oh, okay.
Fair question.
Yeah.
So there's really kind of two ways, and different offensive line coaches will teach things different ways. And I'm just a believer in one way. This is one of those few times where I actually think there is a right and a wrong way to do things unless you are a pin and pull team. And that's my concern, is Joe Rudolph's always been a pin and pull team. Pin and pull linemen tend to just kind of get a body on a body. It's not as much about movement, where zone teams need to be more about getting movement. And essentially, it's like if I were to come off to you and I hit you, and then I just kind of place my hands where they need to place my hands. I fit them on you. What I believe in and what I think is how it should be is when I bring my hands, I'm bringing them with force because I'm trying to get you. I'm trying to rock you back. I'm trying to win that leverage battle, get my hands on you, but not just get my hands on you, but get my hands on you with force. Right. And that's kind of how you win that. When you just place your hands on a guy, your entire ability to win and move is completely now on your lower body. And yes, your lower body is the driver of that, of course. But I think the best way to do it is to come off and just kind of get that violence into that guy's chest and bring your hands like with some explosiveness and some punch. You're not like, because then you get out of control and that's how you end up. A good D lineman is going to be like, whoop, you're going down and I'm going to the court, you know, the ball carrier, and I'm about to get me a, you know, do my sack dance here real quick. So that's what I mean. It's just bringing, I think a better way of doing it that would make sense is bringing it with, you know, just using some punch, using some force with it. I always talked about it being violent. That's just the word that I use. Maybe that's not as helpful of a word, but it's just being strong, using them as a weapon, you know, just really being forceful with your hands and trying to use your upper and lower body to move people. Now, it's not like, boom, out here. It's all here because you're still going to be in tight quarters. So it's like right here. It's like if you're a boxer, right? You've got, you know, there's the jab and then the long stuff. But then there's the stuff where we're in tight quarters and I got to bring my, you know, my stuff here. It's more like that. It's more like fighting when we're kind of in quarters or where, you know, if you're an MMA guy, you know, they get kind of, you know, body on a body. You still got to use your hands with some force, right, to move people. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need to see more from. I feel is one of the biggest concerns I have about how Joe Rudolph teaches O-line. It's just not enough of that emphasis on just really using your hands to be for power. Yeah. He's big on placement, getting your hands inside for placement, but not as much from what I want to see on just the violence that I want to see, the force I want to see from your hands. So that's a very good question, because if I'm saying something that you don't quite know what I mean, I appreciate you asking that question, because I don't think, Josh, you might not have been, you're probably not the only person that had that question. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate you asking that, and I hope that explanation makes sense for you guys.
Anything else you want to mention from the O-line? Gerby Lambert. We're going to talk about Gerby a little bit.
Super raw, but he is different.
Yes.
Like, especially 100%. Now that Jagasol's not there, you're like, that guy looks and moves different from everybody else, right? He just – in his stance, even, he's so long that he's able to kind of have his he doesn't have to sink his butt as much as maybe some other guys, or even sink his shoulders. Like, he's got that real perfect stance because of how long his arms are.
Yeah.
A lot, you mentioned, Vince, that there was a lot of coaching him up on, you know, proper alignment, right? Right.
Like, because they were working goal line today, and so the splits, and you know, they wanted, you know, just they where they wanted guys lining up and some things like that. And so they had to remind him a couple different times, hey, you know, widen out here, take a step back, you know, whatever the case may be. I mean, it's rookie stuff like that, and that's 100% to be expected on day 11 or practice 10 or wherever they're at on this thing. It's totally expected. But once the drill would start and he would make contact, yeah, then it's like, okay, this kid is different.
Yes.
Right? And
foot quickness, explosiveness, absolutely, lateral. I mean, just he moves at a different speed than anybody else.
Correct.
Like Shrouse, okay, the only one that looks like him. Movement, like just athletically. Right. Now, even Ashton is not quite as just, ooh, you know, athletically, ooh, that looks good as what Kirby did. But you can also see he's really raw because there's some synapses where it's like he doesn't look like he knows what he's doing.
Exactly.
But when he knows what he's doing, you're like, that's going to be the dude.
And that's why people are excited about him, obviously, right? And that's why we talked about you might have to speed up the process.
Yes, and that might have to speed up the process. Like, you need to speed up the process.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because he's got to learn all that other stuff. Like, the mental stuff he's got to get down. And so you work that out. You get him with the grad assistant, you know, watching film, you know, doing all of these different things. Like, that's what needs to happen with him. And you got to put it into overdrive. Because if you can find a way for him to help this football team, that's where you want to be. And I'm not promoting that, you know, he pushes somebody out of the starting lineup. I just saying, him individually, if you can put him on a fast track, that's only going to help your football team. That's what I mean by that. You know, no, get him where he needs to be.
It's a no-brainer. Get that kid ready to go. It's exactly, like I said, Vince. Like, it was funny. My some people had asked in the chat, and I actually want to get some people's opinions on this in the chat, but then also on the message board especially. But people talked about, like, should we come up with an IB shirt every year? You know, like okay, you got the IB logo, but then some slogan that represents the season, right? And get like 2024 on it. And I joked to my wife, I said, you know, I said the theme for this year, the thing I've probably said more than any other thing in shows recently is figure it out. You know what I mean? Like, figure it out. You know, it's like I was talking with somebody today at the practice, and it was just like, I don't think fans understand how deep this team is compared to past teams. I mean, like, you know, I was talking, like, you remember 2019 when, like, you know, Tony Jones is like the only moderately healthy running back for the Georgia game. And it's now it's like you could be down to your fourth string running back
and still be okay.
And it's Aeneas Williams. And I'll tell you, look, we're going to talk about Aeneas in a little bit. Maybe it's Kedron Young. You know what I mean? And the backup would be Devin Ford, who's a former top 100 recruit who played at Penn State. You know what I mean? So,
right.
It's this team is so deep. And it's just such an interesting group. But you see that on the offensive line today, Vince, where, you know, there's some guys there that they're just not ready yet. But, man, you got to figure it out. And Kirby Lambert's one of those guys. When a guy looks like he looks athletically and size-wise, dude, figure it out. Get him ready. That's what you get paid money for. And if you can't get a kid like that ready for something, maybe you're not the guy. And I'm saying, like, that's true for any coach. Like, if you can't figure out a way to get that guy going – like, before, I wouldn't have cared because you had Jagasaw, you had Emil, you had Tosh. But now with Jagasaw out, like, okay, you don't have that elite 6'7", 320-plus guy now that is athletic and powerful and has the five-star upside like Charles does. He's gone. You got to figure out how to get this kid ready to go some way, somehow. So it's like, dude, it's figure it out. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, your job is to put a little extra attention to him. Like, we thought that Joe Rudolph was really hard on Rocco Spindler. He's always hard on Rocco Spindler. Well, why? Well, there's two reasons to be really hard on a guy. Number one is you just don't like a guy, and so he's your whipping boy. Or, hey, I think that guy can be really good. He's not giving me the thing, and so I got to really make sure I'm pushing him to make sure I get the most out of him so I can get that guy ready because I need to figure out we got to get this guy going. And so you ask yourself, well, which one is it with him and Rocco? Well, my hope is, as much as we've seen Rocco with the first team, that it's that. It's, dude, I need you to be the guy, but I need you to give me a reason to be the guy, and I'm going to be on you until you give me that reason.
Right.
And you know, that's the thing is, like, you got multiple offensive line coaches now working with him. If, you know, you got some analyst or GA, whoever that other guy is working, I don't know who that is. I'm like, look, dude, you have your number one priority. Your number one job is getting 76 ready to go.
Correct.
That's your job.
Completely agree. And he fits the bill, man. He fits the part. He checks all the boxes, as they say. And so I'm excited to see what they end up doing. Well, I'm not going to see it because we're not going to be a practice, you know, during the season, but right. You know, his maturation process from a mental standpoint is the biggest hurdle yep. right now. And
Charles Jagasaw wasn't ready to play this time exactly. a year ago either. So my comments are not, I can't believe Joe Rudolph doesn't have Gerby Lambert ready to go by practice 11. That's not what I'm saying at all. No. It's just, you need to be in that mode of we're going to spend a little extra attention, a little extra sure. coaching on this guy. Cause we got to get him ready where maybe we didn't have to speed that process up as much prior to Charles Jagasaw going down with an injury.
Well, and just to play devil's advocate, Brian, the last time we were at practice, he was with the third team. Now he's with the second team. So, I mean, it does appear
that he was also with the second team when they were doing,
the stadium yesterday.
Yeah.
Right?
The thing that the video clips that they put out yesterday, Thursday. I don't know when it was, but like whatever the video that they put out, they put it out. I think they put it out yesterday.
They did.
It was probably from the day before because it looked like a night practice. So it was probably from Thursday, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, he was with the second team.
So he's moving in the right direction.
Well, partly because they got the former number two right tackle now playing over the left side. And they've got Ty Chan playing over there too. So, I mean, part of it's process elimination. But it is giving him more reps.
Right.
And it's going to get him more opportunities.
Exactly.
So you figure it out, man.
Right.
You know, figure it out. And that's the thing with this O-line is I'm concerned about the O-line because it's young. And I've said a million times, I don't want to be young. And this offensive line is not going to be as good as it could have been without Charles Jagasaw. It's just not. He was your most physically gifted player.
He was standing out there
but
today.
But not being – I know, he's so huge.
Oh, my gosh.
But not being as good as you would have been doesn't mean you still can't be good. Because when you've got a Billy Shrouth and you've got an Ashton Craig and you've got Emil Wagner and you've got Rocco Spindler and you've got a Tosh Baker and you've got a Gerby Lambert and you've got a Sam Pendleton and you've got a Sullivan Absher, Christopher Tarek is impresses me, you know, with his power and you know, he moves well for his size. Joe Otting is a really talented athletic player. Like there's a lot of talent there, Vince. It's like, but again, Styles Prescott, Peter Jones, yeah. Anthony Knapp, who's I still my big concern with him is the same thing. Is he going to fill out enough to play at Notre Dame? But athletically and the pop in his hands, like those things all pop. They all stand out to me. There's too much talent for this not to be at least a good offensive line.
Right.
And that's the thing is how good? That's more of the question. If they're not at least good, then that's a problem. But
right.
There's enough talent there for this to be a good offensive line. Is it championship caliber? That's the question.
And that's
a
legitimate
what
question.
Know. Right. Very this, but this isn't going to be 2021 offensive line in my, I'll be shocked if that's the case.
I agree.
And that'll make me seriously question the person in charge of it. But I just, even with what we see in practice, I don't see anything that makes me think it's going to be that. And
right.
You know, for the people worried about guys, we did see him start in a game recently, a bowl game recently, and he was fine, you know, so we'll see.
You had a chance to – you were going to head over to the defense and kind of keep an eye on what was going on over there, yeah. And you were able to watch a drill between linebackers and running backs. So why don't you take us through that drill and kind of what you were able to glean from some of those one-on-ones and what they were up to over there.
There wasn't – it's typical of what we've seen, Vince. There wasn't a lot there. They did this period at the beginning where they were kind of like working on like tackling and with tight ends and linebackers and D linemen. I couldn't really see who was what because they kind of had the players around it. But
okay,
that it was a lot of read and react stuff, which is normally what they do in individual, you know, working on different things. We saw a lot of a Don Shuler today working with the first team in those drills today, coming downhill and doing a lot of different things. So that was good to see. And then the more exciting part that I saw today from the most exciting two things I saw from the that group is we'll talk about the linebacker running back one-on-ones for a second. But I was very impressed with what I saw with Al Washington today. They were doing a drill and they go like four or five guys at a time. And then there's also a guy on the opposite side working against him. But they were working today on the exact like what I dislike about the O-line is something exactly I like about what they're doing on the D-line. And it's partly why the offensive line has to be that way. But he was really working on being powerful with your hands when taking on blocks, locking guys out, and then being really aggressive with their block destruction and immediately getting off to the ball and making a tackle. It wasn't on a defender. It was like on a bag. And so I like seeing that where he's a guy that you say, hey, look, it's not just block destruction and go. That's what a lot of D-line coaches do. It's block destruction and go make a tackle. Get off the ball. Go make a tackle on the bag. And so just hearing the coaching points, there's a lot of talk. He doesn't use the word violence like I do, but there's a lot of talk about being strong with your hands, locking guys out, keep them off your body, get them off your body. That's why you can't just place as an offensive lineman, in my opinion. And so when I look at it and say, hey, listen, here's kind of where you need to be. Here's what you need to do. Here's how you need to use your hands. That was good to see. And they did a lot of that. And then working on tackling. I've never seen a D-line work as much on tackling in a practice as I saw today from this D-line in drills, which is good to see because what's our one big knock on the D-line? Obviously,
making getting plays off in the backfield.
The ball.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Finishing plays in the backfield, right?
Right, I mean, exactly.
We talked about that.
Exactly, exactly. So that's kind of where I'm at, Vince, with that. I enjoyed watching that, just kind of listening to him talk. He talks a lot in practice, just constant instruction. Like even before they go to the next drill, he'll stand there and go over exactly once on the next drill, and then they hustle over the next drill, and they're rocking and rolling. So I did like to see that. I was happy to see that from the D-line today, but that's really all we could see from that. The only real competition, Vince, was the linebacker running back one-on-one in pass pro. That was fun to watch.
I can imagine that it was, and I know that you saw – some good things both from the offense and from the defense. And you made an exclamation to me when we were driving home. You're like, yeah, I don't know if we're going to be seeing so-and-so in this particular, you know, scenario or, you know, that kind of a thing. And it was, but a lot of good competition happening during this drill, which is awesome.
Well, the one thing is they didn't just line the linebackers up and say, go.
Right, right.
They have them working through like a smaller area. So that way, because they want them, because like in sometimes you'll see like RB, LB one-on-ones, and it's just kind of like they just roam, kind of like at camps. And it's like, yeah, but it's not going to be like that in a game because you're not going to have this 8-foot gap to work through because you've got linemen in there. You've got a smaller gap you've got to work through as a linebacker. And so they had a very small gap. You had to work through it, and then they have to win. And so you're hearing Max Bulla and Dylan McCullough both just nonstop coaching, which, you know, for me, Vince, that was good to see. And both super encouraging, but super like, hey, do this, do that. I need to see this. I need to see that. And there wasn't a lot of trash talking back and forth. It was as soon as they were done, they were getting instruction from their position coach. Now you see guys kind of getting frustrated themselves, but it was a very fierce competition. But it wasn't like when the rep was going on, there was like some serious pad popping today, man. Like they were getting after it, but it wasn't like shoving each other afterwards. It was disciplined. You know what I mean? It was like, okay, I didn't win my rep. Why? And then Max Bull is on him or Coach McCullough's on him. I actually kind of like that because, you know, I don't get into that. I got my butt kicked, so I'm not going to get pissed off and shove a guy. And I can't stand. I just think that's weak sauce right there. But
yeah,
very competitive period. The two most impressive running backs today were Aeneas Williams and Jadarian Price. And there's for different reasons, they're probably the two strongest guys right now. I would say maybe weight room wise, but they're also the two shortest and they use that to their advantage. They're both very good about getting under the pads of the guy they're going against. You know, Aeneas is 5'9", 5'10". Jadarian's 5'10", 5'11". Like, neither of them are real tall guys. They do a good job getting low and then driving through. And they both have very strong lower bodies. Like, there's a couple times. So, like, the linebackers are working on different types of moves. There's just power, just hit a guy and drive him into the quarterback, going around a guy with power, and then just using speed to get around a guy. Jalen Snead hit this really good spin move today. And I'm like, ooh, that was money. But I think it was Jadarian just went right with him. No, it's actually that rep was Jeremiah Love. Just went right with him and blocked him. Jadarian did a great job taking on power and stoning it. Aeneas did a really good job of taking power and stoning it, although he would kind of get pushed a little bit more. But they both did a really good job of holding their own. I had Aeneas down as winning every single rep that he had. I mean, just getting the job, winning, meaning he got the job done, whether you're not getting to the quarterback. There was one time a guy tried to go really wide on him, and he hit the guy with some force and just kind of drove him around, And Coach McCullough's like, that's exactly, if he's going to go there, then you take him out of there, and we're going to step up into the pocket and handle
absolutely
that.
Absolutely. Like that. That's what I always taught when I was coaching wide receivers, because you're, you know, you're blocking in space, which is not an easy thing to do. And I would always tell them, use their momentum against them. If they want to go inside super hard, take them, you know, go with them, but take them there. If he wants to go outside, take them outside. Use their momentum
again. Especially on an inside blitz, because if you go run past a quarterback, there's a lane that just opened up that the quarterback can step into.
100%.
Absolutely. And so today, to answer a question in the chat, today Aeneas Williams and Jadarian Price were easily the two most impressive running backs. Now, Jeremiah's problem is Jeremiah is still not as big or strong as the other backs yet. It's definitely stronger. But he's just longer. He's a little bit more like of a high-hipped, high-cut kind of guy. Just got a lot longer legs than those other guys. And that can be a challenge for a longer back to kind of, especially when your linebackers are kind of your height, close to your height, you know, kind of coming in and winning. It was a little harder for him to win the leverage battle, and he just doesn't have as much behind as the other running backs. But he battled, Vince, and he was also going against Jalen Snead. So he's going against the twitchiest guy that they had.
Yeah, right.
But I thought he handled himself very well. And Aeneas also, or Jadarian too, also, by the way, had some really impressive wins against Jack Kaiser. And Jack Kaiser's always been a pretty good blitzer. So that was very good to see. But, you know, Jeremiah, you know, lost a couple, won a couple. But it's just about the pad levels just got to improve a little bit. You know, and he would just kind of narrow his base a little bit. And then if they'd get around him, he'd kind of cross. So it's just some technical stuff Jeremiah's kind of prove on, but the compete level was there. And that's an important thing. And then a guy that Kedron Young had an interesting period, because he was really good early on in each rep, and he would hit a guy and stone him. Then he'd stop his feet, and then they'd eventually kind of win around him.
Yeah.
So there's a couple times I'm like, ooh, nice rep by it. Nope, it's gone. You know, so and that's what Coach McCullough.
That's a rookie thing, though.
Like, right. Exactly.
Because in high school, you can get away with that. Because
when college, he would hit guys in high school, he's knocking them to the ground.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
That's kind of what it came to.
But he'll bounce off, you know, that kind of a thing, and it won't matter, right?
Yep.
In college, that's not going to happen. So he's going to have to learn to use his feet.
And, but that initial power, that initial pop was good. He was definitely taking them on. But that's what Coach McCullough kept getting them on, is like, you got to keep working your feet. You got to keep working your feet. Because he would, when he would lose guys late, and he would get mad at himself because initially, like, I got this. Oh, no, I don't got this, you know, and that's something he's gonna have to work on, in my opinion. But he's got the body for it. He just has to keep moving his feet. And that's something that Aeneas did a really good job, is he would hit a guy hard and have that good base, but as soon as that guy tried to work around him, he was moving his feet, you know. So it can be tough because you got to anchor, right? But you can't be so heavy footed in your anchor that guy just kind of then sheds you and goes, or makes him move around you, and then you just lose him,
right?
So that's something that I like to see as well. I thought technically this was a good period for the running backs. I thought the running backs did pretty well today. I thought Drake Bowen had a couple good wins. He just likes to use his power and then kind of just hit a guy and then kind of get up underneath him. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. The guy that had the most impressive rushes to me today, Vince, was Preston Zinner. Now, Kedron Young and Devin Ford both had some issues with Preston Zinner today, and he beat Jake Tefelski on a play as well. He's got a really nice ability to bend around those running backs, to the point where I said in my practice report, like, it's almost a disservice to still have him a linebacker right now, because that guy's got some edge rushing ability, and he's bigger than the other running backs too. Like, I would seriously consider moving Preston Zinner to Viper, or at least have him focus on some of that pass rushing responsibility more, because he's got a knack, from what I saw today, a bit of a knack for rushing the quarterback. Now, again, he didn't go against Jadarian Price. I don't know. I didn't see him against Aeneas. Okay, fair. But when he did win, I mean, he was impressive. He was really impressive. So I liked what I saw from Preston Zinner today. Kingston went against Aeneas most of the time, and it's like Aeneas got him. He got him on that. And what I was surprised by, there was one time where it looked like Kingston was a little pissed that he got beat the previous reps. He just tried to run through Aeneas, didn't work. That's a strong young man right there, number 20, because Kingston is a monster. Like, I mean, we've seen Kingston knock linemen back, but Aeneas was. But why? Why did Aeneas do that? because he would get up underneath Kingston. Yep. And then the one time Kingston tried to go low on him, but Aeneas is so low that it's like he's already down there. You try to go around underneath him, he just puts you on the ground. So I was really impressed with what I saw from Aeneas Williams today at pass pro. Really, because we know he can catch the ball, right? And so this is a young man that's like, hey, who the third down back might be. After today, I'm not sleeping on Aeneas Williams because kid has over 2,000 career receiving yards, Vince. Right? I mean, we know he can catch the football.
Right.
Can he hold up as a pass blocker based on what I saw today?
Yep.
That job might be up for grabs. And I like to, in pass pro, from a pass pro standpoint, you're going to see Jeremiah in there at times because he can pass pro well enough based on what we saw today to still be a weapon because you're going to want to throw the ball to him at times as well. And Jadarian definitely can do that role. But Aeneas Williams might have a shot to get up in that thing too, Vince, okay, based on what I saw. Because his compete level was there. But the thing that surprised me, Vince, was the power that he played with. Like, Aeneas is listed at like 200 pounds. Kingston's listed at 240. And Kingston tried to run through him, and it didn't work. And I was like, okay, that's something. Because Kingston runs through linemen. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was impressive to see. Really impressive to see.
So there were, again, we had five periods, so there's only so much that we can really see. But there were some other guys that were working in some other positions, and you were able to get your eyes on, a little bit. There was some punt return action going on. There was a little bit of wide receiver action going on. You know who doesn't have a camp arm right now is Tyler Buchner. He was zinging him in there to the wide receivers.
Yeah,
that's kind of been his role. It's funny because Sean Stiers and I were joking around because we were kind of watching that as well for a minute. And, and he was doing a good job of throwing. I have seen him throw more balls at practice than I've seen him catch balls. I haven't seen him catch a ball yet. He's just been in there just zinging the ball over at wide receiver drills. But anyway, I digress. You were able to see who was doing some punt returns. They had the jugs machine out, and they were shooting balls at the punt returners. And then you've got a couple of notes on some wide receivers.
The jugs machine kicks wonderful spirals.
Yes, man. It does.
Like, holy moly.
Like, beautiful spiral. I've never seen a more technologically advanced jugs machine. It's got like a laptop on it. Yeah. I mean, what is there to like analyze? Anyway,
I know, right? Because it used to be you had to turn it and get the thing right, and
right
now it's just like, nope, we want like 45, and
it's like, okay, oh my gosh,
whatevs,
right?
But this is the first time that I can remember ever seeing only offensive players returning punts.
Okay.
In the past, I feel like we've always had at least one defensive guy back there, right?
Yep.
In the last couple of years, it was Jaden Mickey, but today it was all offensive guys. So they were working on fielding punts and then blocking punts.
Okay.
And so they were working on different things about getting off, the edge and blocking punts and stuff like that. So the punt returners were Jaden Greathouse, Jordan Faison, KK Smith, Jadarian Price, and Logan Soldate. Were the five kids back there returning punts. So it was all receivers with the exception of Jadarian Price. So it's going to be interesting to see how that battle goes and see who kind of wins that battle right now. Jaden Greathouse was the first guy out there for all the drills. Jordan Faison, I believe, was the next guy, then Jadarian, then KK, then Logan Soldate, I believe is the order that I saw. That doesn't mean that's the order that they're, first, right, second, third, fourth, just saying the order of when they took the reps. So, but, they field the ball well, but it was – a little easier to field it today. You should have fielded it well because they were in a tight zone. There wasn't a lot of room to work with. They were like kind of off towards the sideline.
Yeah.
And they were just working on catching. It wasn't, a couple of them were short and they'd have to run up and go, Peter, and they'd still field it.
Right.
Which they're supposed to.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Coaching football, Brian, I got to tell you, one of my biggest pet peeves on game day was letting a punt hit the ground.
Yeah.
And roll. I just catch the dang ball. Just catch a dang ball, man. Just catch the dang ball. I have lost my mind in games watching a ball hit the ground and then roll another 10 or 20 yards. You know what I mean? It's like, do you understand how hard it is for us to get those 10 or 20 yards? Mm-hmm. Like, just catch the ball, help us out. But anyway, you're absolutely right. Even those short balls, you've got to run up and you've got to catch and you got to secure the catch and just get the ball to your offense. A lot of times that's the goal these days in punt returning. Just get the ball to the offense,
yep,
right? I want somebody back there that's dynamic and can make some things happen, but more often than not, it's secure the ball, get it to the offense.
Unless he's Ricky Waters, Rocket Ismail, or
right.
Devin Hester, I'll sacrifice a little bit of playmaking if it for a guy that catches the ball every time. Because you had that one you returned for 20 yards, oh, electric, but then the next two you let roll and you lose 20 yards
exactly.
each time. You know, it's just, you know, it'd be nice to have both. But the thing is, you look at those guys, those are good athletes. I mean, those are guys that are make you make play kind of guys. I mean, we thought KK was a potential to be a good punt returner coming out of high school. You know, he was a guy that could definitely do damage as a punt returner in high school. I think Jaden Greathouse had something like 4 punt returns for touchdowns as a senior in high school. That guy plays in big-time Texas football. He's not playing against a bunch of stiffs. You know, and obviously Jadarian is a guy that was a good punt returner in high school. And Jordan Faison's a guy that we saw at last year, Notre Dame return punts. So you look at it, Vince, there's talent back there, man. And then Logan Saldate was a good punt returner in high school as well. So all these kids were really good high school punt returners. And this is something we talked about, you know, Ryan and I would talk about when we were doing recruiting shows and talking about the last couple of classes. Look, they're not just landing talented players, but they're also bringing in guys that are going to add value as return men coming out of high school as well. And that's an important piece to this thing as well. I was a little surprised we haven't seen Jeremiah Love back there returning punts, but they like the group they got. I mean not that he wouldn't even be the best guy for it. I just, you know, get him just back there fielding some punts. But yeah, it was a sight to see, man, because there's some athletic kids there. But they weren't doing anything schematically. We wouldn't tell you if they be able to tell you if they were, but they were just working on a technique for field, you know, for receiving punts, and then just the technique on blocking punts, which was good to see. So Marty Biagi gets really intense during those periods, man. Like, and I don't mean that in a negative, insulting way. I know he's really intense during those periods,
and that's awesome.
Because you see him all the other times, he's kind of like this, like happy go lucky, smiling all the time guy, and then they get to those special team periods, and it's like, okay, it's like he hulks out real quick, and you know what I mean, like, and he gets after it. But I mean, it's coaching, it's all coaching and instruction, but it's just like it's like, this is my time to shine, baby. You know what I mean? Like, this is my time to shine. And he gets after, man, which is good to see. Absolutely. And they do a lot of different things at once. Like, they haven't done a whole lot of, as a unit together, doing things. They really compartmentalize and work on instruction on a very small level, right, where you're taking these two kids and they're working with a coach on this, and these two kids are working with a coach on that. And I kind of like that. I'm curious to see how it plays out during the season, as opposed to just lining up there and just doing a bunch of punts. You know, it's like each group is working on something different with a coach who's instructing something different. So I'm very curious to see if that translates to more effective and impactful special teams this season. Because we saw that the one year under Brian Mason. They didn't do, if I remember correctly, we didn't see them do a lot of just always just in full punt team.
Right.
It was always like working on little different aspects of it.
Yep.
So I'm very curious to see if this results in the special teams being more impactful this season than it was a year ago.
And that's all the special teams. I mean, it was punt returns on a jugs machine, and that's all the special teams that we were able to see today. And it was going on simultaneously to all the position drills that were going on, which, by the way, Brian, is a new thing. Like, that's not normally how they do things. It's either they're doing offense and defense, or the entire team is doing special teams. You know what I mean? And so that was actually a different way to go about practice that I haven't seen in a long time, where they're like, hey, you know, these guys aren't really doing anything per se. Let's get them on the jugs machine and have them catch punts like that. Mm-hmm. That was a different way of doing that. So that was actually kind of cool. You said you had a couple of notes on some wide receivers.
Yeah. They were working on some of their more downfield routes and different techniques today. Jaden Thomas, just real quick. He probably looks as his body has changed a little bit since the fall.
It's funny that you say
not
that.
As thick.
Yep.
You know, like and it's the result is he's a little bit more. I mean, he's never going to be like a burner, and I don't know that I think he looks faster than he has in the past. I think his speed hasn't changed, but he looks cleaner getting in out of breaks. He just looks quicker.
Yes.
And you know, with a little bit less weight, like he probably looks about 215, 218.
He had the whole jersey kind of tucked up today, and his torso just looks more cut. You know how when you're in really good shape and you kind of got that V, that he's got more of that V.
Yeah.
He didn't have that V before. It's more of an H.
You know what I mean? He looked like a thick 220 plus receiver.
Yes.
He's a little bit more fluid. Yeah.
It's funny that you mentioned that. He caught a pass in the corner of the end zone right where we were standing watching offensive line, and he almost ran into me and Sean. And I
but you were an athlete, you got out of the way.
100%. Okay. Come on, man. You can't touch this.
No. Or did Jaden get out of the way?
No, it was me. Okay. But no, I mean, and he came pretty close to us, and I happened to look at it. I was like, at first I saw his, like, his body shape, and I was like, oh, I wonder who that is. And then I saw his number. I was like, oh, okay, that's Jaden Thomas. He looks a little bit different now. So it's funny that you bring that up, because I had noticed the exact same thing when he came over kind of close to us after catching a touchdown in the corner of the end zone.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't look like, oh my God, I don't recognize him anymore. But he's noticeably thinned out a little bit.
Yep.
You know, and 100%. I wonder if that's something that they decided to do more so to help keep him healthy. You know, just get some of that weight down, because he's had a lot of hamstring and knees and like all his stuff he deals with all the time. It's all lower body stuff.
Yeah.
You know, maybe thin him out a little bit and take a little bit of weight off of him and see if that helps keep him clean, you know, health-wise. But he looked good. He was a little sharper getting in out of his cuts. You know, like, it was a move where it was like you're making three different cuts, and he just was real sharp and clean. Some of the guys were like real rigid. Like, I'll just use this as an example. This isn't what they were running today, but there's something called a burst corner. It's when you run a corner out from the outside, Vince. It's the one where you kind of go up, in, up, out. And the best guys at it kind of, or they're like kind of smooth and then boom. And other guys are like rigid, boop, boop. And right, it's like the rigid one comes at times when you're attacking a flat defender that you want to freeze. But other guys, when I'm talking about when you're doing it, and it's just like, doot, doot. And Jade today was really clean on going into different types of routes. Again, they weren't running the burst corner today. I'm using that as an example, but it's one where there's multiple cuts because you're attacking leverage and you're trying to influence. Because sometimes if you're an outside receiver, hey, the route I'm running, I'm actually trying to influence the safety. I got to work in and then get vertical. And it was stuff like that. So I thought he looked good. Bo Collins looked really good today. Chris Mitchell's got to be more consistent catching the ball. I have noticed that in practices. I don't know if it's a cut, because I've never seen him have drop issues in games, but he just is a little inconsistent catching the ball in practice is something I noticed. I think Logan Saldate is still learning how to run routes. He's a little bit rigid, but when he's just kind of relaxed and just goes and plays, he's a pretty quick, twitchy kid. And, you know, you knew he was an athlete coming in, but you just kind of like to see it in person, you know, just make sure that it definitely pops in person. But that's something that I saw today that I was impressed by as well, was just watching Logan. He's got really nice feet. Micah Gilbert's a lot. He has definitely gotten more explosive since the spring.
Okay.
Like just coming out of breaks, right? And I don't know that – I'm not saying he's necessarily more athletic or more explosive athletically, but I think that comfort level on how to get into and out of, he plays with a lot of confidence, and it was, he's an impressive looking kid. So that's kind of really it for me today. I didn't watch a ton of the quarterbacks, you know, watch them throw deep balls. It wasn't great. You know, today they were working on some deep stuff and there were some, you know, guys just the timing was slightly off either from the receivers or the quarterbacks. It was on the other side of the field, so I couldn't see like what numbers they were, but couple of them balls hit the ground that shouldn't hit the ground. A couple times it looked like the receivers were at fault. A couple times quarterbacks just missed, but I didn't see enough of it to really have a strong opinion on that on that period, Vince.
Yeah, and you had mentioned earlier on, in case people weren't here at the beginning of the practice report, that you know you're at day 10 or 11. Camp arm is a thing. You're throwing a ton of balls during camp, and this is about the time where you start to get a little bit of fatigue in the arm. So that's not overly surprising. I mean, even in the five periods that we watch, quarterbacks are chucking the ball around. I mean, there's a lot of throws on all five of the quarterback's arms. I mean, they're all throwing the same amount of balls. And, you know, I could see that being a real thing here. And it's going to continue for the next few days until they start to back off once they get into A&M prep. So, you know, there's a reason there's a term called camp arm. Right. And we,
you, and every team goes through that. You just absolutely get those, and that's part of getting in game shape is having the pads on and you're doing, you know, and that's why I always joke every year about, you know, like you're going to go through emotional phases of your team through camp.
Yes, you are.
There's the first day we're going to beat everyone because we look them like $1 million. There's the middle of camp. holy crap, we might not win a game this year. And then there's, okay, this is who we really are. And that's more close to the end of camp. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is funny because you know it's coming as a coach, but you're still like, oh my God, we might not beat anybody after the practice we had today. You know what I mean? It's just like, we can't throw, but the good news is we also can't catch. but at least we can't block anybody.
It's so funny.
The good news is, though, that they can't tackle either.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's just like, God, we suck. And every team goes through that in the middle of fall camp.
Dude, it's so
because you're tired as a coach.
Yes.
Right? Like your players are in that middle of camp, heavy legs, just, you know, and then you power through it. That's part of getting your body and your mind in the right place.
Exactly.
But it's for coaches too, man, because you do have that right in the middle of camp where you're like, hey, we're pretty terrible. You know, we got to figure this out.
I was talking to a few of the high school coaches, and they're a week in, right? And they only have 2 weeks of camp, and they're a week in. They had their inner squad scrimmage last night, and I was like, hey, you know, how'd the film look? You know, he's like, he looks me dead in the eyes. He's like, we suck. Like, we're going to be terrible. I'm like, all right, man, relax. And you know, it's the whole thing. It's exactly what you said, and it doesn't matter what level you're on. When you're right smack dab in the middle of camp, and that's where they are, it's like, yeah, this is not good. Like, we got a lot of work to do. And I'm like, yep, that sounds normal. So I got a good chuckle out of that this morning after Notre Dame practice. I went over there. So that was really funny. But, hey, we got Notre Dame has a few more practices before they get into A&M prep. Go ahead, Brian.
We did have a super chat.
Oh, okay.
That I wanted to get to before we do our wrapping things up here.
Andy Milton fan, thank you so much for the super chat. Really appreciate you, my man. It says, who do you suspect is the number two left tackle now? That's kind of a loaded question, Brian, because it's who's the number two left tackle on the depth chart? And if something happens to the left tackle, who would actually play? I don't know if those are the same answer. Maybe they are, but yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know that I know the answer to that right now, Vince, right, because if we're talking about who is it right now in drills, it's Anthony Knapp.
It's Anthony Knapp
right now is who we've kind of see be that guy. Would he be the next guy in? Would they put Ty Chan in? We've seen Ty Chan get some snaps there, but you know, is Anthony Knapp in position where he can hold up at the point of attack well enough there? I mean, athletically, Anthony Knapp is, I mean, he's good. That
and
was
he's
never
obviously picking things up.
Yeah. And that was never the question, you know, but and also, so I mean, right now, I think the answer is Anthony Knapp,
right?
Because that's where he is. He's working with the number twos at left tackle. I don't know that. I don't know, and I'm not saying it. It could very well be that if something happens to Tosh Baker, they're going to put Anthony Knapp in there. That could. I'm simply saying I don't know if that's what they would do right now. Because like right now, if Ashton Craig went down, would they just immediately put Sam Pendleton or Joe Otting in the game, or would they put, you know, Pat Coogan in there? If Billy Shrouth goes down, are they going to put Christopher Tarek or Sylvan Abshire in a game, or would they put the loser of the Pat Coogan Rocco Spindler battle over there? That's what I'm saying. I don't know the answer to that, but right now the guy working with the number two left tackles is Anthony Knapp, and that's been true. That was true when Charles Jagasol was still healthy.
Right. Yep. So and that's why I said it the way I did, because it does
exactly. But when Jagasol went down, it wasn't Anthony Knapp that they slid into the number one. That's the question.
Perfect. Exactly. Perfect point. That is going to do it for our practice report. And I believe this is like practice 10 or 11, something along those lines. And so our 5-period look in on practice. And again, it was a shorter practice today. And the reason we know it was a shorter practice is because the time between when we left and then when post-practice interviews start was much smaller. And so, which makes a lot of sense because of where they're at, you know, in their camp progression and all that. And it's a weekend and all that fun stuff as well. And so camp continues to roll, and they got a good, I would imagine, a good week of camp left. And then they'll kind of transition to A&M prep. And we can talk about that later as to what that means and how that changes the way practice looks and, you know, the focus and the show me team and, you know, the show team and all of that. Like, things start to get hammered out a little bit more. And of course, that's when we are not allowed more to watch practice.
I did want to say one thing about Chris Mitchell. Last year, Chris Mitchell, according to Pro Football Focus, only had 3 drops.
Okay.
And he only had 3 drops the year before that. And he didn't have any drops the 2 years before that. 3 drops is pretty normal. And his drop rate on targets, like he was targeted 100 times and only had 3 drops. So, like, it's just, to me, it's like, it's not something I'm concerned about. Yes, he's had drops in practice more than he should. But that's not something I see on film. And I've said this before. I've had receivers, Vince, probably the best receiver I ever had, ever coached, kid named Michael Warfield at Duquesne. Was a very mediocre practice player.
Yeah.
Just because physically he was very tightly wound athletic, like body-wise. So it was harder for him to get loose in practice when he didn't have the same adrenaline that he had for a game.
Sure.
And then also games were usually later in the day than when we had practice. And he just would get more loose. But just, you know, he wasn't always the greatest catcher on practice, but you get to a game and there's nobody out playing him for the football.
Right.
I mean, we played against Monmouth for the national title, Vince, and they had Miles Austin as their other receiver. And Miles Austin was not the best receiver on the field that day. Michael Warfield was. You know what I mean? But right. Some guys are just that way. And Chris Mitchell's a 6-year senior that has had no drop problems in his career. So I don't want people to get panicked about that. He drops the ball too much from what I see in practice.
Right.
But it's just not something I'm overly concerned about just because I, as a receivers coach, I've seen that.
Right.
I've seen guys that just, you know, their concentration isn't the same. It's like, dude, I've done this a million times. Oh, I should have been more locked in. Where a young guy's like, I got to do everything right. And, you know, so I just wanted to make sure that we cleared that up.
Cool.
Before people worry too much about me saying that he's had a few too many drops in fall camp. Because again, 100 targets last year, 3 drops. That's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Anything else?
Oh, man, that's it.
Okay, that's it. So that's going to do it for this practice report for today. Hey, make sure you hit the like button, the subscribe button, that notification bell. Share it with your family and friends. We will be back on Monday for our normal afternoon show. And then, of course, Ivy Nation Sports Talk after that. In the meantime, Brian, I hope everybody has a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday. If you live anywhere near Notre Dame, it is gorgeous outside.
Oh, yes.
Get outside, enjoy it before they turn the heat up outside again. But right now, man, it feels like almost like a end of September, like early October day. It's beautiful. Get outside, enjoy yourself, enjoy the rest of your weekend, enjoy your Sunday. And we will talk to you next time on the Irish Breakdown Podcast.